Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about The Sentry, the character from Marvel Comics that went good and then bad, and then bad. But first of all, you of course know my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Hello, Internet.
And yes, let's start with reading the weekly solicitations. So, let's see here. Action Labs, don't know any of this stuff.
You don't know NFL Rush Zone? The greatest tie-in comic book after NFL Super Pro ever?
I do not.
Good, you really don't want to.
Thank you. Okay, Antarctic Press, we have Gold Digger by our friend Fred Ferry. Don't know where it's going right now, but I'm sure it's nice. And moving on, we have Archie Comics with Archie, Double Digest, Mega Man.
Yeah. World of Archie.
Yes. All right, let's move on. Okay, don't know
Boom
that.
Studios. Yeah, there's nothing. Surprisingly, there's nothing really came out from Boom this week.
Bada bing.
Bada boom. Let's see. Cinebook, Danger Zone, Dark Horse. New BPRD, new Conan trades.
Trades are always worth looking at.
Yeah. Actually, that new Captain Midnight series, I've really been enjoying that. Mm. It's not quite so good that I'm willing to wait for trades, but I do look forward to the single issues when it comes out.
Okay.
DC, we got Animal Man, Batman 66. I love how since the demise of Damian Wayne, they've turned the Batman and title into, it's like the new Brave and the Bold, kind of. Well, it's just the last few months, it's basically, Batman and Catwoman, Batman and Nightwing, and now it's Batman and Two-Face.
Batman 66 is like a 66 version of Nightwing?
No, he's not quite that old. Although, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to... They have an issue where Robin becomes Nightwing or something.
That's, where Burt Ward's Robin turns... Oh, God, that'd be so...
Well, they've already brought in Dr. Harleen Quinzel in a couple of issues back. Where it's the Arkham Institute for the Criminally Insane, and it looks exactly how you would think the Arkham Asylum would look in the 66 universe. And it's also, coincidentally enough, it's an issue where a man disguised as the Red Hood is seeking to kill the Joker. Which kind of got me intrigued, because wasn't the Joker the Red Hood?
Yeah.
So they had that. What else do they have from DC? It's just kind of padding the new Justice League 27, but it's like the reinvention of Cyborg. Set amidst the Forever Evil crossover, where they still haven't explained how it happened, because with the first issue of Forever Evil, all the techno bits of Cyborg gain sentience and become this evil thing called the Grid, and like literally all the technology peels off of Vic Stone's body, so then he's literally half a man. And then in this one, it's he's alive barely, and he convinces his dad and Dr. Teo Moro, who is more or less a good guy still in the New 52, to rebuild his cybernetic parts.
Make him faster, stronger, better.
Yeah, and probably runs about $6 million a day. But yeah, it was a decent issue. It wasn't a great issue, but it was a decent issue. It's just basically setting him up for as they get into the backstretch of Forever Evil here.
Forever Evil, DC Comics is the only company I know that can make a plotline sound, plotline title that sounds like they stole it from fucking Power Rangers.
Yeah, but from what I've... I completely agree with that. But
if a magic candle's involved, then I'm out of here.
Yeah. The more the candle burns, the less powerful Superman becomes. But yeah.
Well, magic candle, that might work.
Yeah. Well, no, it's just because I recently reread, like I got the I bought like the first six issues of Justice League when it first came out, and I was rereading those recently, going through my collection. I noticed that there's this evil, like this skull face coin that's like the communicator for like the criminals, the crime syndicate, who are like, the evil Justice League from like Earth 3. Except they had that this coin in like one of the last panels of the end. Was it the sixth issue, which was the end of the initial story arc of Justice League? And I guess DC has kind of been prepping for this in the first couple of years of the new 52. It's just, surprise. I don't know. It's just, I think once the miniseries is over and I can go back and read it, like the whole thing from front to back, then maybe it'll make more sense. But as it is, it's just like, oh, it's a crossover and everyone's involved. Hooray!
Anyway.
Yeah. Although when you skip down the list, you had Mercy Sparks, number six from Devil's Due, which I kind of dig that story. It's like a devil child or some devling, I think is the terminology in the book. And it's basically a she devil who's a hit is a bounty hunter for heaven. That concept alone just kind of is like, okay, I'll probably enjoy this, because I mean that there's very little that you can do to make that worse, but you could always make it better.
So what's next?
Dynamite, picked up the
Dynamite!
no, Jimmy J.J. Walker is not involved in this enterprise, unfortunately, because that would make it all kinds of awesome. There's not a lot in here. I picked up the first issue of Badass this week, which this guy is his superpower is basically being Inspector Tequila from Hard Boiled. It's this guy named Dead End who is like a hitman for this giant dragon man crime boss, and he kills him, and it looks like it could be some just insane ass-kicking fun, because he's basically trying to set himself up as the new criminal kingpin in this city. The new Doc Savage is actually a lot of fun, and I guess this initial storyline is they're going through different eras of Doc Savage's history from like the 1930s, and the second issue is set in the 60s, where Doc is still kind of youthful, but it's like Long Tom and Rennie and Ham and all, they're getting on in years, and it's every issue covers a different decade or set in the midst of a different decade, but there's an overarching story, which has been really cool. And of the licensed comics that Dynamite does, this one actually, in the first two issues, I get a lot more, I get a bigger sense of respect for the character and the stories and the history of it than I ever did with any of the Green Hornet comics they did, with the exception being Mark Waid's Green Hornet,
Excellent.
because he did Green Hornet Year One, which is basically is how did Britt Reed meet Kato? How did they set up their headquarters? How did they come up with like the idea of the Green Hornet? And they still use the idea that John Reed, aka the Lone Ranger, is a ancestor of Britt Reed. So that's kind of where he gets the idea to do the masked man thing. But other than that, there's not a lot coming out of Dynamite right now that I'm getting into.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see here. We have IDW, and the only thing that really jumps out in my eye here is X-Files Conspiracy Ghostbusters, number one.
Yeah,
The
actually,
Lone
I'm not.
Gunman with the Ghostbusters.
Well, it's and the fact of the matter is, this is set in the X-Files season 10 universe, which, and we've spoke off air, Ben's spoken to me off air about this, folks. Not a fan of the continuing season comics, are we?
No.
Not at all. But yeah, I mean, like this one, the storyline from what I've read on comicvine.com is basically the lone gunmen get a package from the future detailing a forthcoming, potentially apocalyptic event, and they get all this information on, these ghost hunters in New York City and reports of giant talking turtles and robots that change shape. So that's kind of how what they're going there, which could kind of be cool to see the lone gunman and potentially Mulder and Scully, meet like Optimus Prime and the Ninja Turtles and that. So the other ones on here, like IDW, they started doing the Ben 10 and the Samurai Jack comics. The Ben 10 comics are kind of, very meh.
Yeah, from a very meh series.
Yeah. But, well, if, you know, I know you're not a big fan of the whole Dial H for Hero homage, although, let's face it.
I love Dial H for Hero. I love it so much that I think the original creator should get money whenever his work is copied.
Then that this is true. I don't disagree. I'm just saying, it's just, yeah, it's probably not going to happen, but... Let's face it, a character using a wrist-mounted MacGuffin to change his shape into...
Shaped like a dial. Functioning like a dial.
You're just not going to let this go, are you?
Look!
It's okay. It's okay to say yes. You're not going to let it go. I get that. But the Samurai Jack comic, the first few issues have actually been really good. And it's... There's like an... It's each issue could be a standalone episode. Like, this could be... Like, say, this could have been, like, the last five episodes of the series.
Mm.
Even if they end it with him still searching for a way to get back to the past, it's just this... Each comic reads, like, feels like an episode. And it's basically Jack is on a quest to reassemble the Rope of Time or Rope of Aeons or something like that. And it's basically he's trying to find these golden threads which will... allow him to this magic rope that will allow him to travel back in time and, you know, put a stop to Aku's evil, which the power of that animated series, just as quick aside, is such that whenever I read an issue of this comic, like on the inside cover, they have a four panel illustrated sequence of the opening monologue from Mako that opened every episode of Samurai Jack. And even when I get to the end of it, is the theme song goes off in my head automatically, and you can heal. Oh God, I'm killing the voice of Samurai Jack. He was Green Lantern in Justice League. Help me out, Ben. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Green Lantern in Justice League.
Yeah.
John Stewart.
He was John Stewart. He was Static Shock.
Phil LaMarr.
Ah, that's it. God, why couldn't I remember that? But yeah, when you read Jack's dialogue, you hear Phil LaMarr's voice. And there's been some sequences, you know, where Aku kind of popped in and out, and you hear Mako's voice, which was it Genndy Tartakovsky?
Genndy, yes.
Yeah. If Genndy ever manages to get like the Samurai Jack movie made, they need to find somebody that can do Mako's voice verbatim, because otherwise it just won't play. But back to the list.
Yes, back to the list. Let's see here. We have Image. Nothing really interests me on Image today. Walking Dead's still going on. It's as much a zombie as the characters in it.
Pretty much. Chew. Have you read Chew at all?
Oh, boy.
Not a fan of the Chew.
The Chew has been a guest on Animation Aficionados many times. But no, not this comic.
No, it's interesting. It's kind of weird and quirky kind of thing. But the setup being that there is the avian flu is blamed on chicken. And as a result, actual chicken is now illegal. And the Food and Drug Administration becomes more powerful than the NSA. That's basically the backstory.
I see.
All right, so we got nothing else there. Was it Marvel? A whole lot of all new right off the top of the list.
Okay, let's see here, further down the list. Marvel. Marvel, let's move on. I don't really see anything that grabs me right now. So let's...
Five comics? We got to do an episode on Atomic Robo at some point.
We will. But let's wrap up the solicitations right now.
Yeah, that's about the only thing. Nothing in Viz. We all know how I feel about Xenoscope.
Yes, we do.
I just can't read those.
In public.
And without, you know, making weird noises. Because the art is that good. And good is a subjective term around the two of us.
Yes. So let's move on to the break. When we come back, we will be addressing the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right. And we, hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we, okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Come on, man.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama. It's comedy. It's Decian, the superhero webcomic. Decian has superhero antics and sexy girls. Catch updates weekly at Decian.com and NoSuperPants.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back with the topic of the show. We're talking about Marvel character The Sentry, created by Paul Jenkins and Jay Lee. I gotta say, I actually did like the original Sentry Mini. Because it sort of plays on the sort of concept of childhood wonderment and awe and stuff like that. Like, here's this Golden Age Marvel character that everyone forgot, where they even created a fictitious publication history of this character. This is a character that was like a gentle Silver Age Superman kind of throwback who did things like he helped, you know, he hung out with Reed Richards. He helped, you know, he helped Angel of the X-Men go overcome his fear of heights. He helped
the Hulk Spider-Man get a Pulitzer.
Yeah, he helped the Hulk become a force of good. And here's this character that was just, you know, who's such a wonderful throwback. Let's be frank. He is pretty much Silver Age Superman.
Yeah, done Marvel style. I mean,
he
got his powers from the Golden Age trope. You know, he got his powers from a potion with the power of a million exploding suns.
Yes.
He had the aw shucks of Superman mixed with the aw shucks of Captain America, at least with the flashback stories that we got.
There's some Doc Savage there, and definitely, like I said, what you see here is mostly the stuff that you could take from the Silver Age Superman, which was distilled out of Superman and then brought back in. Like there's lots of Tom Strong in the character, which again was from Silver Age Superman. There's lots of, there's a slight dash of Mr. Majestic, who again, Silver Age Superman. It's like all these little dashes coming back in Marvel style, like you said, and the original Sentry Mini is beautiful because here it is, like it's like here's this character, the Sentry, who is like the embodiment of this childhood wonderment that you used to have reading comics back when they didn't suck. And it's like, I remember these times. It's sort of like as these characters, all these characters in the Marvel universe, remembering the Sentry. You're remembering your love affair when you were a child with comic books.
Well, yeah, like with just the pure innocence at play of Silver Age titles. I mean, it's very, and a lot of, maybe you could add a dash of Captain Marvel to the Sentry too, and just the whole, you know, forthright, you know, upstanding jaw of iron sort of character that he was. And yeah, the origins of the Sentry story, at least the initial miniseries, was, you know, they had this Wizard magazine back then, you know, before it started to suck towards the end. They used to do like the annual April Fool's Day in their April issue, and they had one year where it was like Underdog, Hong Kong Phooey, a couple other of, like, you know, the Hanna-Barbera dog characters, and they were gonna, there was this whole article about how they were gonna write this new kind of mature take on it kind of thing. And there was one where they were going to, another gag was they're going to use, was it Count Chocula, Frankenberry, Boo Berry, and Fruit Brute. And they were going to, Yeah. And they were going to do like a kind of a more horror themed, more adult take on it. And this was all gags that, like the next month they would have like a special section in the letters column that where people are calling is like, "Ah, you got me again, wizard." And this was probably one of the best ones because they got, I forget who they got to do the art. Oh God, he did. It wasn't Ron Lim. It was a Thor artist. Kind of had a lot of Jack Kirby. He did like Avengers Next and all that back in the 90s, but he had like this simple sketch, pencil sketch, and it was, the Sentry in his yellow and gold or blue and gold costume. And they're saying like, "Oh yeah, we found this stuff in the Marvel, cleaning out this closet in the Marvel offices." And oh, we Stan Lee is like quoted as saying, "Oh, I can't believe we never did this back in the day." So they're gonna like produce this as a new comic. And then it came out as it was just this huge gag. But then it got some wheels because everyone was kind of fell in love with this whole Silver Age Superman from Marvel. Like, why don't we do this story? And yeah, the initial like was like 6-issue mini and some spin-off comics done by was it Jay or Jai Lee? I can never remember how to pronounce that correctly. Can you, Ben?
Nah,
I
I
just
can't.
can't. Well, let's just call him, we'll just say Jay Lee. But yeah, Jay Lee did the interior art, and his is always this kind of wispy, painted almost of look to his art. Very, I wouldn't necessarily say gothic, but they had that in the main mini, and then they had these spin-offs like the Hulk and Sentry and the Hulk and Sentry and Spider-Man, Sentry and the Fantastic Four. And each comic was done in the style of like say the 70s or the 60s or the 80s Marvel
Yes.
to show like those these slices of these moments of time in the greater Marvel continuity. And they're written, under the auspices, it's these characters actually interacted. And I mean, they did in the story, because the idea is that at some point, there's the Void is the main, he's like the Joker to the Sentry's Batman. And the Void was had grown so powerful at one point in time that the Sentry came up with this process where he wiped the memory of him and the Void from everybody on Earth.
Because he is the void. He is the other side of that coin.
Yeah, because his power is so great that his mind kind of like, snap. And that was one of the great things, is it's almost kind of a meta story in a way, and how they go to like these different moments in Marvel's history with the tie-in comics. And then you see that, like you said, how the Sentry helps the Hulk, kind of his energy mellows the Hulk out and becomes like not necessarily docile, but more,
Of a force of good.
yeah, more even-tempered, easier to handle. And then, like you said, he a picture Peter Parker has a Pulitzer that he can never remember because of this. And his friends, because his powers make him as intelligent as Mr. Fantastic, so
They went on
they're basically,
adventures, yeah.
yeah, they went out there kicking back on a sun deck on the Baxter Building, just kicking back lemonade and all that. And it was so much fun. And like you said at the beginning, it was just fun, this miniseries, both in set in the darker modern day story, but as well as these,
Yeah, and
the
the thing is, at the same time, it doesn't have that same, to be blunt, squickiness that Marvel Man does,
Yeah.
because there are certainly a couple of tiny Marvel Man parallels, but it doesn't have that same squickiness.
Yeah.
And yes, I do have a certain distaste for Marvel Man, but that's another show.
Yeah.
And but like I said, the original miniseries was beautiful and nice, and it's such a nice homage to the golden and silver age, and this feeling of childhood wonderment. And then all of a sudden they went, "All right, let's make him a character." And this, my friends, is the fault whenever you do that. I mean, this is exactly
They
what
just,
happened. This is
you
exactly what
couldn't just
happened.
leave well enough alone.
Yeah, this is exactly what happened when DC Comics, to go to a tangent, said, "Oh, this Hawk World Elseworlds was great. It's part of continuity now." And it's like, "Wait, what?
Yeah.
No. Oh, damn." Which is exactly what the Hawkman writer said.
It's like, ah, son of a bitch. Yeah, no, I remember that. And I know you don't like Geoff Johns' work a lot.
He does what every other Hawkman writer in the past did. He took what he liked and dumped the rest. He did not make all of Hawk continuity magically work together. I'm sorry. That is a myth.
Okay, you know what? Let me finish talking or even start before you start jumping all over me. I mean, I'm not saying his work was perfect, but from what I knew of the scattershot history of Hawkman, how he streamlined it worked. It wasn't great, but it worked. But with the Sentry, it's like I said, if they had just left well enough alone,
it would have been remembered as a beautiful thing. Live short and left a beautiful corpse. But it's like I said, the problem I have with it is exactly your problem. It's when they said, okay, Sentry, he's going to be a real thing now. Okay, he's going to be on the Avengers now. Okay, now he's on the Dark Avengers, and he's getting counseling from Norman Osborn.
Because that's going to end well.
And there are other issues with the Sentry as an ongoing character. Like, he has a supercomputer on his Citadel that tells him who he can and can't save. I get it. It's drawing into that Tom Strong / Silver Age Superman / Mr. Majestic kind of feel, but at the same time, there's this squeakiness to, I only do what a computer tells me to do, because
I don't know if it was so much he did what the computer told him to do, such as you've got, 12.6 seconds to save this life, and you only have 13.8 seconds to save this person, and it's just that part of it that, he kind of arbitrarily almost just, okay, I could totally get this person over here, but this person is like that 0.8 of a second closer, like that sort of thing. Just like, really? Like, why?
Yeah.
I mean, they tried to explain it because the whole idea in the second miniseries that they did of the Sentry, with some really good art by Romita Jr., I mean, say what you will.
I like Romita Jr.
I'm not saying it like you don't like it. I'm just saying it's some decent art. I mean, it's not always on, but he was on with the Sentry miniseries.
His lines were a little bit thicker than I cared for. Use some thinner lead there, John.
Yeah. No, I get that. But with the idea that they took, like I said, if they had just left well enough alone, dare I say, this would have got the Sentry would have gone on to be like one of the Marvel stories or comic minis or anything. But they, first of all, bring him back in the first issue of the first volume of New Avengers.
Yes.
Where with the, with the breakout and everything that kind of started the slow
where
burn towards, like,
he's on the raft himself.
Because he killed his wife.
Who later out turns out to be alive.
And then, see, whereas the idea that the power of the Sentry is such that his mind creates the void as this complete polar opposite, which I loved. We both loved that. But then they explain later on in the miniseries and in the New Avengers, as they get more into the Sentry, the void is a psychic virus created by Mastermind of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And that's why he goes nuts for Cocoa Puffs.
Yes.
Yeah. They had that, and then they had, and I mean, part of that New Avengers storyline is eventually they break the whole idea of the Sentry was somehow, and this is where they kind of like run the original Sentry miniseries over with a 3-ton truck, is the Sentry, despite being having his power having his memory wiped from everyone in the world, somehow sends this psychic yell out to comic book writer Paul Jenkins, who they bring into the story as an actual character in the Marvel universe.
Yes, who also basically says to the Sentry, dude, you're fucked up.
Yeah, he says he fucked up. He's like, you're just a comic book that I came up with. And so it's just how they took such a beautiful, simple, why did you have to futz with this concept and just try to make, we're making it bigger and epic and more spectacular. And because, I mean, in the second Sentry mini, you find out the void is like this evil cackling madman in a trench coat and a low hat. And he basically, for every life that the Sentry saves, the void goes out and
kills
does
one.
Something, kills one. Like, basically, whatever the sentry does, the void does worse, more or less. And it's just, they screwed with it so bad, and then they had this, by the end of the second miniseries, you know, the void has been separated from the sentry, and then they suggest that the sentry is the... is like the fake, and the void is the real Bob Reynolds, and like he's his own separate being, and the void is thrown into the sun and destroyed. And then for a while they just treated the sentry as this potential ticking time bomb, but he's still a part of the Avengers, and he's part of the pro-registration program people. And then Secret Invasion happens, and Norman Osborn becomes evil Nick Fury, and Osborn recruits him for the Dark Avengers.
And also, is his therapist.
Or, well, it's not so much his therapist, is like, he, let's have a chat, shall we? You know, it's like they didn't even try bringing in, like, Doc Samson or anything like that, which, at least if you know Marvel continuity, you think he would be the go-to guy for screwed-up, ultra-powerful superhumans. And by and large, he goes through the Dark Avengers relatively unscathed until he's discorporated into separate molecules by the Molecule Man, then reforms himself on his own in Avengers Tower, and then Siege happens, which is, you know, the ultimate culmination of Bendis's storyline writing, where Norman Osborn convinces the Sentry to, like, let go and merge with the Void, who has reassuited or reformed his own self. And it basically, for a guy who's supposed to be ultra-powerful and potentially more powerful than Thor, it takes the combined effort of all the renegade heroes to lay a whooping on him. And then Thor finishes him off with a lightning bolt and throws the body into the sun. And we all breathed a sigh of relief, because the sentry was gone, never to darken our door again.
But wait, fuck.
And then Marvel Now happened.
Well, you skip through World War Hulk.
What, where the Hulk knocked him out?
Well, World War Hulk, where the sentry is just sitting watching TV for 98% of the story.
Yeah, and everyone's got agoraphobia now, which yeah, I...
And what? Everyone's like, dude, please, you know, your aura calms him down, and everyone knows it, or, you know, you used to be his friend, you know, do something. And he's like, sorry, TV. And it's like, people are dying and shit like that. And he's just watching the damn TV. And then he's like, okay, finally, after things got so bad, he finally goes out there, and then they both collapse after, pounding that is just completely anticlimactic at this point.
Yeah, they basically pound the superpowers out of each other, and then Bruce Banner knocks out Robert Reynolds, like Bob Reynolds, because, you know, he's reverted back to his human form.
And to be completely fair, Bruce Banner is more in shape than Robert Reynolds.
Yeah.
To be completely fair.
Because you don't swing that as many punches as the Hulk without that something happening to Bruce Banner's.
He did go Savage Banner once.
Yeah.
Where that's when Professor Hulk gets so mad, he becomes Savage Banner.
Yeah.
And let's never speak of that.
But yeah, so, I mean, it gets, like, you know, then World War Hulk, and then Secret Invasion, Dark Avengers Siege. Then, like I said, Marvel Now happened, where they created this is post-Avengers versus X-Men, where mutants are being born on around the world again. And Captain America, in a rather, I wouldn't say inspired mood, but it's not something you would expect from him. He creates a media-savvy team called the Uncanny Avengers, where half the lineup is mutants and half the lineup is, you know, Avengers. Like, not necessarily mutants or anything like that, just
so Avengers. He's basically doing something that basically says mutants are as welcome as the Avengers as Wolverine is.
Yeah, it's just, we're all, it's all inclusive, it's all good. And
we are only the third, fifth, and seventh team that has Wolverine on it.
Yeah, it's like, can we move this bub? I gotta be at the X Mansion in like 5 minutes to teach a class, because he's Professor Wolverine as well.
Yes, and then it's like, And I have to go join X-Force on an adventure in Europe, and then...
Oh, and there's an Alpha Flight reunion next week. I'm not going to be available on Thursday.
Bub.
That's Bub, yeah. I'll bring back some Canadian for you. But yeah, so in the current storyline of Uncanny Avengers, there's these characters known as the Apocalypse Twins, who were raised in the future by Kang the Conqueror, and they've come back in time to like create a mutant homeworld and just basically save the mutant race. And they've used these things called Techno Seeds to resurrect four mutant characters. And there's the Banshee, Dawkins, Wolverine's douchebag son,
who
the Grim
should
Reaper.
Stay dead.
Yeah, but he doesn't. And although Dawkins did give rise to the short-lived Frankencastle comic, which I kind of enjoyed. And then the Sentry. So
he's not a mutant.
Nope, but the technology worked on him, and they wanted somebody to take out Thor, which is a smart play, all things said and done. But it's like, you notice how much love we spoke about the initial miniseries? I mean, how it was a love letter to the Silver Age, and how it just slowly...
More golden than silver, but yeah.
Oh, you get to the... It was not a mistake to create the Sentry. It was a mistake to bring him back after that. And the fact that, you know, we need a Superman. No, you don't. You have Thor.
Yeah.
You've got two of them. You've got Thor and you've got Hercules.
They have more than that. They also have, what's the name of the guy with the mohawk?
Gladiator.
Gladiator. They have fucking Gladiator.
Who, his entire race is basically super people.
Well, actually, all of those characters, all of the Shi'ar Royal Guards are basically carbon
the
copies.
Legion of Superheroes.
Yes. You know the story. Okay.
No, I love the Legion of Superheroes, so I'm intimately aware when somebody tries to copy that magic. But yeah, I mean it's not that you can't write good stories with the Sentry. Like if they again, I'm on the record of saying they should have just left well enough alone. And if you wanted to bring him back, you could have brought him back. You did not need to make him a, for lack of a better term, a nuclear-powered schizophrenic, which is what they turned him into. I mean, first of all, they gave him multiple personality disorder with, you know, the Sentry, Bob Reynolds, and Void.
And where the Void is actually locked in his vault, in his watchtower. And it turns out it's just
a chair and a mirror.
Yeah, I know. It's like, hello, Clarice.
Well, it wasn't so much
hello, Clarice. It puts the lotion on its skin or else it gets the hose again.
Yeah, it's like, it's a mix one part Silence of the Lambs and one part with the mirror scene. Well, the mirror scene from, one part Silence of the Lambs, one part Fight Club, and sprinkle with the mirror scene from the first Raimi Spider-Man. Which, again, is one of my favorite scenes in that film, but it's Willem Dafoe, and how can you not love his work?
Willem Dafoe starting on one corner of the scenery and gobbling it up all the way to the next.
Oh, and you know, just Hannibal Lecter looks at that and goes, damn, son! But yeah, like, if you could take, like, they gave him multiple personality disorder, and then they made him delusional, and then they, and for some reason... How do you have the balls? How do you have the grapefruits to take this guy who you've already made him delusional, schizophrenic, multiple personality disorder? That's the other thing, how they change his or they modify his origin. And then they make him agoraphobic. How do you... That doesn't even make sense. Why would you make the most powerful being in the universe... potentially afraid to go outside when this man could squint and crush your head like a grape potentially
because,
why would you make him afraid to go out? It doesn't
because
enhance
the
character
because the thing is this, if they realize that they always had him and I'm not excusing bad writing but I'm just telling you what's going through the writer's head, they realize that they always have him and he's happy-go-lucky, then all of a sudden they're writing Silver Age Superman. And they don't want to write Silver Age Superman, so they made him the most fucked up character in the comic. And the thing is this, is you don't need to do that to write a good story with a character like this. Like, the before-mentioned Mr. Majestic has that Silver Age Superman kind of feel, except Majestros is like a total asshole. He doesn't have a personality problem. He just has a bad personality.
He's a dick.
And it's yet, like, at the same time, it's an enjoyable book.
Exactly. And then they have, what's the one I'm thinking of? I was thinking of, like they said, the revised origin we got in the John Romita Jr. miniseries, where he was a meth head
who and he was looking somehow, for a high.
And he, for some reason, okay, like the backstory, before you even, we mentioned the meth head, they create Project Sentry, which is basically Project Super Soldier 2.0. And they create this new Super Soldier serum, which is like a million times, or they call it super saturated, and that doesn't even begin to make sense.
This is the part that doesn't make sense to me, because it implies that the Super Soldier Serum, which helps Captain America by giving him the physical peak of humanity and make sure that his muscles don't create those stress toxins. Acid acids and stress toxins. That if you take this serum and you just put next to it X a million, that this serum that just like enhances physical ability can all of a sudden make you have mental Green Lantern powers, fly, and other shit. It's like, fuck you, no, I'm gone, sorry.
Okay, now Ben has explained this perfectly, folks, but I would challenge anyone, not Ben, but anyone, explain to me how this one of the scientists that's involved in this thing, why would he have a live sample of this serum in his office, which is easily broken into by a 16-year-old meth head? If you're creating a new version of the Super Soldier Serum, you got that shit locked up in the lowest fucking level of Area 51.
Or in the highest area of S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters.
In the helicarrier. Yes. No, let's just put it in a ground floor office where any kid can break in. Oh, and again, you talk about how the Sentry is Silver Age Superman. His origin is Silver Age Jimmy Olsen. Because only Jimmy Olsen would be stupid enough to drink a glowing green tube of liquid thinking, oh, this looks like soda pop.
No, he thought, oh, this will make me get high.
Well, that too. But that's what I mean. That was such a Silver Age Jimmy Olsen thing where he drinks it and he gets superpowers.
So now I'm picturing that the scientist looks like Walter White and the 15-year-old Sentry looks like
Jesse Pinkman.
Yes, and he keeps on saying bitch.
Yeah, he's like, oh, science, bitch.
Yes. Now all of a sudden it's 100 times better. Thank you.
You're right. Yeah. But yeah, like
any artist out there, draw this. We will put it on the site.
In fact, that could be the show art. Is Walter. Yes. Walter White is a scientist and Jesse Pinkman is a superhero.
As the Sentry. Bitch!
Or he's like, power of a million exploding suns, bitch! Oh, God. Like you said, and it's not just the first miniseries. Like, if they had... Okay, and here's how you fix the new Avengers thing. He's in prison because he thinks he killed his wife, but there's no body. But the authorities have him locked away. And then they have the storyline where he's screwed up because of this mental virus by Mastermind. Fine. And then they have a storyline where the Void starts coming back and people start remembering that the Void is there because of the Sentry. So they're trying to find some way. And I mean, if they go from there and they have this storyline where they separate the Sentry and the Void is killed, and he drops that bomb at the end of the story just before he dies that I'm the real Robert Reynolds.
And thank then you. That congratulations. You created the Clone Saga. Thank you.
I'm just saying they could have done so much better. And if two comic connoisseurs like us can sit here in the space of 45 minutes, figure out how to make the story better than what actually was, then something's wrong with the writing in the industry.
Oh, yeah, there is. There is. Well, you know what I never understood is, okay, the Sentry kills Carnage, right? In New Avengers, right? Okay, yeah. Which Carnage is this? Because I remember Carnage coming back later.
I'm not entirely certain, and just excuse me.
Was this just a symbiote by itself, or was there a squishy human inside it?
I'm going to look that up right now because I can't honestly remember. But yeah, that was one of the best images from that. Let's see here, Breakout. Okay, presumably it was. It says it was presumed that Cassie was killed, but it was probably just the symbiote. For whatever reason, I mean, they never actually explained that because, well, no one was doing anything with Carnage at the time. That was about it. See, oh, we want to have a cool visual. Let's have this guy who's like Superman fly up in the atmosphere and rip Venom in two. No. Venom's too popular. Do the other one. Brother.
Venom was doing something. No, Venom was bonded with that millionaire brat kid back then. And then Scorpion stole Venom.
He didn't steal Venom. I remember that issue. It's like he's running away from a fight, and the symbiote was like, oh, nuts to that. And the symbiote leaves the kid, who's like a Mafia Don's son or something. Like, he leaves the kid of his own free will. And then eventually bonds with Mac Gargan, the Scorpion. And just, they left it like that for years.
And as Spider-Man put it, He, it's Venom and not even the good one.
Yeah, that was great. And then the symbiote got bonded to Flash Thompson. And we
know what happens then.
Well, it's not that bad. It's better. It was better than I ever gave it credit for. But back to the Sentry. It's just like they had these great moments and they had potentially this great story, but they just ran out of ideas. Like they probably just had, so they threw an intern into the closet with all the graphic novels and spun him around with a blindfold on and told him to point, and he hit the Sentry. Okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do something new with him. Why?
I don't know.
I don't know. Is there anything else we can say yay or nay about the Sentry?
I'm glad that they don't want to continue doing this whole, Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill thing anymore.
Yeah.
So, I think we're all centered out here. So let's wrap up. This was our view on the character of the Sentry, which started with a beautiful miniseries and then kept going. And kept becoming more and more mentally damaged. I mean, this is like the poster child example of modern comic book writing done wrong.
You know, honestly, in all things, I'd say this is like Madonna. They just didn't know when to get off the damn stage.
Well, for me, it was when the Flaming Crosses started showing up, but that's another story.
Well, that's my point exactly. You know, it's... Literally, the end of the first Sentry miniseries is the burning cross in, was that Like a Prayer?
Yes.
Yeah, the end of the first Sentry miniseries is like a prayer. That's when they should have been done with it, and then it kept going and kept going. And oh look, I'm into henna tattoos and Eastern Indian philosophy, and oh, I'm married to that guy that
in a British accent.
Yeah, oh god. And it kept going and going, and yeah, it's just, she didn't know when to get off the damn stage.
Yep, so this wraps up our feelings on the Sentry. Maybe next time we should do a special on Hawkman and Hawk continuity. This is your host, Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.